podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere on your devices. All streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/Twit to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/Twit, or go to twit.tv and click the Hulu Plus banner. Welcome to All About Android, episode 106, recorded on April 23rd, 2013, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
And we're down a team member. Jason is off. He is hopefully welcoming a new member to his family as we talk, as we speak. And filling in his shoes is the always pleasant Aaron Newcomb.
Always pleasant. That's nice. Thank
you. It's always pleasant to have you here. So Aaron, normally a Floss Weekly.
Yeah, Floss Weekly, other shows occasionally, this show, This Week in Google. So, yep.
So it's important to note that you'll be probably seeing a lot more of Aaron over the next couple of weeks as Jason deals with the changing status quo in his household.
That's right.
We all know that the new baby is not the easiest thing to adjust to, so we wish him luck.
Yep.
And if we get news of the baby, we will break in and do the breaking news, but we're crossing our fingers everything's okay with Jason and his family.
That's right, because we don't know for sure. We haven't heard the official news yet, so it could be any moment.
It could be right during the show.
During the show, which would be incredibly ironic and cool. So
it would be true breaking news.
Yes.
I got to admit, I'm kind of hoping for it.
Yes. But,
But we got a jam-packed week this week of news about on All About Android. This week we'll be discussing Android freedom. App revenue is up, but so are malicious apps. The Galaxy 4 watch continues. But before we get started, we got a couple of cool, neat little gadgets here that we just wanted to quickly kind of look at. First off, when I walked in here into the brick house, everybody said, ooh, have you seen the HTC One yet? And here it is. There is the HTC One. I had not seen it yet. This is the first time I've actually got my hands on it. Gina, Aaron, have you guys seen it yet? Or
no, I've just seen pictures. And I've got to say, to see it in person, I mean, it is a beautiful device.
I'll give them credit. All my gut instinct about the unibody, kind of like the new design of HTC was right. This is a very pretty device.
Yeah.
It holds nicely. It's thin, but not too thin. It's not too, you know, like it's light, but not too light. You know, like they seem to have got the right balance of it. I still don't love HTC Sense. But as a piece of hardware, this is a pretty nice phone. I dig it. So I got a nice camera on the back. The Beats audio, as always. Chad is going to...
4-megapixel camera. There we go.
4-megapixel camera on the back.
Which sounds weird, but it's got multiple sensors, so...
Right. Yeah, I'll be curious to see how that... How people like that. Mm-hmm. What is that? What do they call it? The ultra pixel?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's supposed to do really well in low light. You know, I don't know. I think the jury's out on that. I think if you have multiple sensors, I think is going to be the way that people go forward. But 4 megapixels, I know megapixels aren't everything, but you're still not going to get a photo that looks really good on a small screen is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Better than other photos on small screens. But then if you blow it up, you're going to maybe be a little unhappy with how it looks on your 46-inch and higher television screen.
Yeah.
So, but the display is awesome. 1080p display. I mean, look at that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful display. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty neat. So, definitely going to be looking forward to people's reviews and see what people think of it as they get more time with it. Very interesting. But then also, Aaron, you brought a neat little gadget here.
Oh, yeah. This is something I've been wanting to get for a while, actually. This is a ginormous battery. That's all it is. It's by Anker. There's a couple other ones that you can get on Amazon. This is a 10,000 milliamp. Battery. So you plug it in, you charge it up, and then you can take it on the road with you and charge up your phone if you need to. Now, I always buy spare batteries for my phones if they allow me to change them, which is a feature I always look for, obviously. But this has another additional feature. You can check it, you can turn it on, and it has blinky lights. And but one really cool thing it has is it has an additional output down here on the bottom. And that output, and it comes with every connector known to man, by the way, for power connectivity. That output can output either 12 volts or 9 volts. So if you're using this with, for example, what I'm going to use it for is a Raspberry Pi, I can actually power a small TFT screen to go along with the Raspberry Pi while I'm powering the Pi at the same time. So, you know, I feel really like, cool little device.
I feel like they need to bring back Pimp My Ride.
Yeah.
Because you know, that was like 10 years ago. Right. And they were putting screens and all these devices in. They were putting big hard drives in.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
they could put in a box like this, a screen like this, little, you know, like all these little devices.
And exactly.
It makes mobile kind of mobile technology that much easier to do.
That's right. That's right. And it'll last a long time. I mean, you can run the Raspberry Pi off of 4 AA batteries. So this will actually run the Pi. I don't know what the specs are on it. I could probably figure it out if I did some math, but you can run the Pi off of this for a long time. It also has different outputs, which is really nice. One for Samsung devices, which require a special connectivity. It requires the data pins to be shorted to get an AC charge. And it also has one for iPod or Apple compatible devices. So if you're an Android person, you got a Samsung device, it'll work, or Apple, it'll work. Really nice. It's about $50 on Amazon. If you go to Amazon, you can find it. They have different models. They even have one that's even bigger. I think it goes all the way up to 20,000 milliamps. I don't know how big that thing's going to be, but really cool. So if you're looking to get some mobile power for your devices, I would highly recommend one of these little battery systems.
I keep meaning to get one of those because I'm on the road so much, and I can't tell you how often my cell phone runs down. I'm carrying the cable. I'm looking for some place to plug in. If I just had one of those portable batteries, I would need that.
Yeah, I'm guessing this will easily get you coast to coast on a plane.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, without losing your battery.
I'm worried about is leaving my phone behind the bar while they're charging it, and then my friends move on. I'm like, I left my phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, cool, excellent. Well, that said, let's dive into news.
The ACLU is doing its part to try to combat Android fragmentation. This is an interesting story. So the ACLU files a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission against the major carriers, Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T, basically saying that they've got two major problems, by denying consumers updates to Android's operating system, that they've left those consumers open to malware, bugs, and exploits, and that they're deceiving customers by not informing them about security risks present, you know, in their builds of Android. So the ACLU's goal is to force these major carriers to kind of warn consumers that their Android devices that are out of date pose security risks, and give consumers the option to return their phones to get the more, you know, the updates that they should get. So this is kind of interesting, right? I mean, this is the ACLU basically saying that fragmentation is not just it's a huge problem, like that consumers shouldn't put up with it, and they should be able to get their updates more quickly.
It's funny because reading this article made me think, is like who do you want the least to get into your business? Do you want the EU, the FTC, or the ACLU? I'm not sure. ACLU is there protecting our rights and our freedoms, and good for them on pointing this out. But that's really specific for them to get into. Like, I haven't heard the ACLU getting that involved from on a technology platform standpoint,
right?
As much as this. So,
Kind of amazing calling early versions of Android defective software. Like, I get the idea that, you know, the Android, all early Android versions are out of date, and of course there are bugs and exploits all the time, right? But what does it do for Android if consumers start getting warnings right after they buy a phone that they're running defective software, and that they should go back to the store and return it for something more recent?
That sounds an awful lot like a lawyer's interpretation of defective software. Right. We know the software, it runs, it works, it's just not getting critical updates. And we'll have a story later on talking about the rise of malicious malware, you know, and apps and things like that in the App Store. So it is getting a little dangerous. You know, this is the big problem between the open platformness of Android versus a lockdown environment like a BlackBerry or like iOS.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of look at this as an opportunity. I mean, maybe there's an opportunity here for a service for someone to come along and say, you know what, install our app on your old phone and we'll tell you the security risks. I mean, from a third party, I'm not saying from Google or anybody else, but like a third party that would provide this and charge a service fee. Like, here's for $1 a month, you know, we will, you know, I mean, it's basically like putting a piece of virus software on your phone. You know, we'll tell you what you're susceptible to or something like that. And I don't know. It just seems a little bit of an overkill to me. For the ACLU to get involved this way, but maybe it'll just draw attention to the fact that this is an issue and people should be aware of it.
I mean, I would hate to go buy a phone and then have an app tell me what's wrong with it.
Well, that's the thing. It's gonna make the Android experience terrible for regular people, right? I mean, it's just gonna be a terrible thing for Android. I mean, I like the idea of forcing carriers to be a little faster about distributing updates, right? I mean, that whole system is just broken. It takes too long. Yeah. So I kind of feel like whatever controls we can put in place for software updates to get out quickly, that's a good thing. But at the same time, you know, warning consumers about all the things that are wrong with their brand new phone just seems like it's gonna give Android a terrible name.
Well, the solution is that the carriers need to carry phones that are updatable. You know, the moment a phone falls off that obsolescence cliff and is no longer an updatable version of Android, they really should not be selling it. And the problem there becomes a supply chain problem, you know, where they have the stock and the inventory, you know, then they're, you know, sitting with a warehouse full of old phones running, running, you know, previous versions of Android.
The other thing is this could be an opportunity for Google themselves to promote their own phones, the Nexus phones, right? Because the new software releases always come out on Nexus phones first, because then the carriers have to do all their stuff, right? So it always takes forever. So, I mean, this would be, I don't know, if I was Google, I would totally focus on this for business and say, look, you know, if you're going to be buying phones for your employees, or if you're going to let them bring phones in, you know, maybe there's an upside to making sure that they're Nexus devices that we can update quickly and reliably and, you know, try to avoid some of these things. I think there's an opportunity there for them. And I know that BlackBerry has, you know, kind of jumped on this with the whole security thing. Like when you're at work, you're, you know, siphoned off into this portion of the phone, whatever. I think there's an opportunity there for Google to come in and say, look, we'll do the same thing, but we'll do it with just with our Nexus devices that we've, you know, said are going to get the updates right away. So,
yeah. Really interesting. So we'll keep an eye on this to see how this goes. The ACLU getting involved in Android is quite interesting. But nothing shakes the legal talk as much as talking about numbers and talking about how Android is performing, especially when compared to iOS. App Annie, a service, released their numbers comparing the iOS App Store to the Google Play Store. And to give some context, last year, in Q4 2012, Apple's App Store was 4 times the sales of Google Play. In Q1 2013, it's 2.6 times. So the gap between iOS and Google Play in terms of revenue earned by apps is getting smaller. Google Play has increased 90% over that time period. And while iOS still leads in revenue, Google Play is making some really good leaps and bounds in terms of increasing the amount of revenue spent within the App Store environments. Games are still the biggest revenue driver in the United States, China, Russia, Japan, and South Korea. In Q1 2013, it was 80% of revenue in Google Play and 70% of revenue in the iOS App Store. It's interesting to compare. I know a lot of times we try not to compare Android to iOS to see how they're all doing. But in this case, I think it's interesting in that iOS photo and video apps are number 3 and education apps are number 4 worldwide, while on Google Play, social apps are now in the top 5 in the top 5 categories of apps. For Google Play, the countries that lead by download are the United States, South Korea, India, Russia, and Japan, whereas in iOS, it's the U.S., China, the U.K., Japan, and France. Hmm. So it's interesting to see the different kind of global markets getting in there. I know I've been in a lot of conversations and business conversations in my day job arguing over the merits of Android, and one of the complaints and one of the criticisms people have on it is that Android users don't spend money, meaning that they don't spend money to buy apps, they don't spend money on the in-app purchases. Now, I'm very bullish on Android. I said, yeah, I don't agree with that, but it seems that that tide is somewhat turning.
Well, it does, and it is interesting that more people pay for apps. Basically, what this is saying is more people are paying for apps on the iOS App Store, right? And but the number of apps that people download are higher on Android or from the Google Play Store anyway. Yep. So there's a couple things here that it doesn't – I didn't read the whole article, and maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a couple things here. Like what about like the Kindle App Store and all the other app stores? You know, did they track that? It doesn't appear that they did. And what about ad revenue generated apps that, you know, apps that are free but they incur some sort of revenue based on ads? Like, I'm not sure they were able to capture that statistic either. I think that would be really interesting. Of course, the poster child for that is Rovio with the Angry Birds apps, right? Because initially they charged on iPhone. I don't know if they're still doing that. They charged on the iOS App Store, but they didn't charge in the Google Play Store. Right. And they just had ads in the Google Play Store. And I think now you can buy the versions that don't have
ads. And they have in-app purchases now.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. But it would just be interesting to see those statistics thrown in and see what it looks like.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, yeah, and this report's focused solely on revenue generation through app sales and in-app purchases.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, whether or not I believe the Android platform is way more robust in the terms of ad revenue than it is on the iOS platform. I notice more – it seems more aggressive – not aggressive, but just more frequency of ads on Android devices than on iOS. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I'm not an iOS user. This is just from what I see by looking over friends' shoulders while they're using apps and things like that. But yeah, that'd be curious. And I think that – I wonder how much the Amazon App Store and GetJar and the Nook store and things like that, whether or not they're statistically significant in the comparison.
Yeah. That's, I think the Kindle store, or they call it the Kindle store, or just the Amazon app store. That one may throw a little bit of a, may have just enough to boost the numbers a little bit. Yep. But you're right. The other ones probably aren't very significant.
Yeah. So interesting though. We keep tracking the numbers and Android keeps growing. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the takeaway, right, is that the gap is closing. Like people spend more money on iOS, but the gap is closing over time. So I think that perception is probably kind of right. But if you're thinking about building an app, you want to go with the Android because the gap is closing and people are actually purchasing more apps on Android.
Yeah.
Speaking of games, which is the biggest revenue driver noted in that story, there's been a leak that indicates that Google is going to announce an Android Game Center with all sorts of interesting features, multiplayer, chat, lobbies, leaderboards, and achievements. I absolutely love this story because the reason why this leak came out is because the guys at Android Police do their APK teardowns, which is when they take the Android app, an Android app file, and tear it apart and unzip it and look at what's inside. So they take the My Glass app, which has got released last week. That's the companion app for Google Glass. They unzip the entire thing, the APK, and they see a bunch of folders inside the My Glass app, which point toward a game center. So it's a completely unrelated app. And the Android Police says they think that Google sort of accidentally shipped all these kind of folders and files that point toward these new features, which have not been released yet. And so it's kind of interesting. You know, Google, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Google released this Google Play Services framework for developers, which is a way for developers to say, these are the Google components that I need for my app to run. And Android Police is saying when they released My Glass, they just didn't pick and choose. They just shipped everything, and including these unreleased features of this purported alleged game center. So this might be something we're going to see at I/O next month. It wouldn't surprise me at all, right? If games is such a big growth area in the Play Store, it makes sense that there would be an Android game center and that Google will capitalize on that.
Well, yeah, and this is as we've continued to start up the Google I/O rumor engine. But what I find really interesting is the fact that this came in the breakdown of the Google Glass APK, which means it's one thing to talk about a game center. That totally makes sense. I really believe we'll see that at Google I/O. But are you talking games enabled on Google Glass? Are you able to play games with people through that? Like, that's interesting as well, too. Like, how is that going to get applied to that device?
It's going to be like in the Star Trek The Next Generation. You know, remember that episode with... They had to get the little thing in the butt. It was like addictive, but it was somebody was taking over the ship and all that stuff. That's what it's going to be. Will Wheaton got to kiss, what was her name?
Now I'm blanking.
Ashley Judd, right? Ashley Judd?
I think it was. Yeah.
A younger Ashley Judd. Anyway.
A high moment for Will Wheaton.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like every time I watch that episode, I'm thinking like, man, he must have just been like freaking out over this. Anyway, where were we talking about? Oh yeah, that's right.
Games. Game Center.
Ashley
Ashley Judd. Oh,
listen,
now I
Ashley
again.
Judd is going to be in the middle of this Game Center. It's going to be
right.
Amazing.
That's right. That's right. Now I'm all blushing. Okay, so I think it's going to be really cool. And the thing that I kind of hoping is the Ouya is coming out. I'm hoping to get mine any day.
They've started the ship.
They've got some slow things going on. They've had to recalibrate some of their production lines and things like that, but they are starting to ship. And so I'm thinking, man, wouldn't that be cool if Ouya was able to tap into some sort of, game so you could store your stats and get awards and achievements and things like that. That'd be really cool.
Makes sense. So definitely something to keep an eye out for.
I'm not sure that the game center is actually going to run on Glass, though, right? Because not a lot of apps run on Glass.
No, I was talking more about the games interacting with Glass and then being tracked with Game Center.
Yeah,
like real world.
Like
Ingress, right?
Ingress. Someone in the chat room mentioned
perfect,
Ingress. Yeah, Ingress would be a great, AR capability aspect to it in a world. You know, like there's what's that game that Dr. Tiki did, Code Runner or something like that, where you're in the world and it's using geographical data and it's feeding you information and you can see a layer over what you're looking at. That'd be really cool. Well, so to add to the Google I/O rumor pile, and now this one is total rumor. We were looking for some more sources to validate it, but we only came up with a couple. But so nothing's confirmed at this point. But rumor now is that the next iteration of Google Android's operating system, codenamed Key Lime Pie, will not be ready for Google I/O. Sources close to Google and within the Android development have made it clear, or not made it clear, but have suggested that Key Lime Pie will not be ready for Google I/O and therefore it won't be rolled out. We're going to keep an eye on this one. Who knows if this is true or not? I for one would be surprised. I imagine that's something that they probably have to get into Google I/O. I don't know how much I believe this. Mm-hmm. Whether or not whether or not maybe Key Lime Pie is not ready to be released, like rolled out at Google I/O, that seems to make more sense. But they're probably going to go over what's going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think of this?
No doubt. There's no way that they're not going to at least preview Key Lime Pie. Look, Google I/O is basically the two major tracks there. It's a developer conference. And the two major tracks are Android and Chrome. And I would say that Android is probably even more active track than Chrome.
Yep. Agreed.
So it would really surprise me if they didn't have something huge, at least to announce, at least an SDK. They're going to release something new with Android, even if it's just the SDK or some, you know, just announce what's going to be in Key Lime Pie. It would surprise me a lot if they didn't have...
And they can announce what it is and then roll it out a month later. Like,
or 2 months.
Or 2 months. Yeah. There's no reason why they can't have a rolled out, but they're going to announce it and go over it. The question will be whether or not how demo ready it is. Should be interesting to see
Do we know for sure that it's going to be 5.0 and not 4.3?
I don't know that for sure.
I mean, it seems like it would. I mean, everything that I've seen leads me to believe that it would be 5.0, but right. I don't think anyone's been able to confirm that or even highly suggest that it's going to be 5.0 and not 4.3.
It's going to have to. I mean, I might be old school, but I'm a firm believer that a dot release change has got to be pretty significant.
Yeah.
You know, and so depending on what they're planning to roll out and given the amount of time between the two iterations, I would be surprised if it was 5.0.
Yeah. And then the other thing, I mean, even in this article from Talk Android, you know, they're saying that they say the supposed reason is to give the OEMs time to breathe because they're not able to keep up with the frantic pace that Google and other people, the developers actually that are developing Android, are releasing new versions of Android.
Yep.
I think there's something in that as well. But again, it gets back to just buy a Nexus device, go ahead and release it, let the manufacturers keep up. And you know, Google will always be able to keep up with their own development efforts and the development efforts of Android. So,
yeah, Google should not do that. Google needs to work on making that pipeline faster, not slowing down.
Exactly.
So the OEMs can catch up. That's crazy.
Exactly.
Right?
Agreed. So we'll keep an eye on this one as we get closer to Google I/O. As the march to Google I/O continues, we'll see if this is true or not. But in the meantime, we got an email, Gina.
Yeah, we got an email from Sam from Cleveland. Chad, do you have that queued up?
It's a voicemail.
It's a voicemail. Sorry, yeah.
Excellent.
Even better.
And we like to catch Chad off guard.
Oh, sorry,
unawares.
Chad. Hey, this is Sam from Cleveland. Love the show. I had a question. I have an old Android phone that I'm no longer using as a phone, but I thought I could use it maybe as a companion device. Specifically, I was looking to see if I can use it as a sensor for my laundry machine. My washing machine dryer, in the sense that if I can set it up so that I can set my old phone on the washer or dryer, and of course it shakes when it's doing its thing, and I would like it to notify my other Android phone after the laundry is done, when the machine has stopped. And I think you should be able to do this through some kind of measurement through the gyroscope, or whatever sensor the phone has. And then when it's done, it'll kind of set up a task to do a notification either by, I don't know what. But do you know of any kind of app that would do that? I think this could be a great app if it exists to use for all the people that have leftover old Android phones. Thanks very much. Bye.
So this is a pretty interesting question, and I kind of like Sam's approach to it. Like, the gyroscope of my Android phone should be able to sense whether or not the dryer is working. I wasn't able to find something that does that specifically, but there's a way to get notifications with something. This was a good suggestion, and actually, 4 episodes ago, we had Marquez Brownlee on the show, and his Arena app was it's called NFC. Sorry.
Like NFC Alert or something like that? Or NFC?
Yeah. It's called NFC Task Launcher.
Yeah.
So I think the way to tackle this is to set up NFC tags on your dryer and to scan them to set a timer on your phone automatically. So your phone will let you know, when the dryer or the washer is done. And in fact, Lifehacker wrote up a post about this called how to automate your phone for every room in the house. It's not quite as sexy as using the gyroscope to detect motion and, you know, and alerting another phone, but it works just as well. And you can set up NFC tags throughout your entire house and set them to trigger certain tasks when you scan them with your phone really easily. So you should check out the episode. It was episode 102 when Marquez discussed how he uses NFC tags. And you can check out that Lifehacker article with the solution as well. And I just want to thank Gene Miller and Nahir Mozaria. That was in the Android, the All About Android community on Google Plus, made that suggestion to use NFC tags versus the other app that uses the gyroscope.
So the NFC tags, though, those are only if you're using the timed cycle, right?
Right, yeah.
If you're using the auto...
You program the NFC tag to say, okay, now set the timer for an hour from now.
Right. So, but if you're using the auto detect how dirty your laundry is feature, does that exist? it seems like it must exist. My dishwasher has it. So if you're using that, though, it's not going to work. So I would think you could also do this with Tasker.
Yeah, Tasker.
Tasker would be able to do this. And, you know, I wrote an app that I never finished, which was a sound player thing, right? Yeah. Which uses the gyroscope to play a sound like when you make a footstep, right? So you could easily, you know, go in and somebody could write an app if this doesn't already exist. I think there's several out there in the market that let you do this, that just basically let you calibrate the gyroscopes. You know, here's my phone at rest. There's some for earthquakes, I know for sure. Here's my phone at rest and here's my phone not at rest. You know, pick out what those two variables are. And then just trigger it to do something via Tasker or if the app supports it natively through the app. So I think there's two ways to go about it. I like the NFC idea, though, for timed laundry machines, not smart laundry machines, but timed laundry machines.
I just feel like the detecting the motion, that's a solution looking for a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I was trying to think of other applications of this, is like strap it to your pet see if your pet's on the move. Like, I don't know what else you would do that.
The newest version of Android has got that nifty stock stopwatch, and it's got all these alarms. You could just say, hey, my dryer takes an hour. Just set it for an hour.
Yeah.
But I get the neat aspect of it. But cool. Well, thanks for calling in with your voicemail. It's always good to hear from everybody. And before we move on, we have a bit of breaking news, I think, if Chad's got
it. Uh-oh.
We've got some breaking news here.
Breaking news.
This just in from Twitter from our aforementioned Jason Howell, who announced that World, meet our newest creation, Savannah Jade Howell, born 3:03 p.m., 8 pounds, 13 ounces. So congratulations. Hashtag ecstatic. so congratulations to Jason and family, to the newest member of the Howell family.
Cute.
She's beautiful.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
Yes.
Aw.
And we got to announce it on All About Android.
I know it happened during the show. $5 says he waited. I will go on record now to say he waited to send this tweet until we were live. That's my guess.
Well, all of my dreams came true. I wanted this to happen on the show so bad.
So that's awesome.
If he did wait, then I'll give him credit for sitting on that for 3 hours.
Nah, I bet he didn't. It takes some time after.
Yeah.
You know, to move on to the next stage. Yes. After you deliver, so it could just be coincidence, but
so
it's pretty cool.
Breaking news, our first All About Android baby. So congratulations, Jason and family.
Yeah, congratulations, Jason. Savannah Jade is such a beautiful name, too.
Weren't they keeping it a secret? Wasn't it like ultra secret what the name was going to be? I felt like was. Yeah.
Savannah Jade Howell. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so
cool.
Awesome. So now he's got to register for Twitter and get her username
before
someone else does.
Make sure to buy that domain name.
Yeah, exactly. That was the first thing I did when my friend had his first child. The moment I got it, I registered the Twitter name. Like, in case you want it. There you
never know.
So excellent. Well, congratulations, Jason and the family. Thanks for the update. That breaking news and all of this content is brought to you by Hulu Plus. We want to thank Hulu Plus for supporting All About Android and sponsoring this episode. Hulu Plus offers unlimited instant streaming of current hit TV shows, classic series, and acclaimed movies, which means it's fast and easy to get to your favorite shows. Hulu Plus is available on connected TVs, Blu-ray players, gaming consoles like the PS3, the Xbox 360, set-top boxes like the Apple TV and Roku, mobile phones and tablets, and more. You can continue your viewing experience seamlessly across your devices, start watching on your phone, and then continue watching on your tablet or your TV. I use Hulu Plus on a regular basis. I use it on my tablet when I'm at the gym and I'm watching my TV shows as I'm on there sweating away on the elliptical. Then I can pop over to my phone and pick up right where I left off. Hulu Plus is fantastic for watching TV on the go, especially on your commute and other places where you can get a good data signal and be able to watch crystal clear TV. If you have got an HTC One on that beautiful 1080p screen, Hulu Plus is the perfect companion application for a great big screen on your mobile device. So you can get an extra free week of Hulu Plus when you sign up at HuluPlus.com/twit. You can get a free 2-week trial instead of the 1-week trial that they normally offer. Just go to twit.tv and click on the Hulu Plus banner, or go to HuluPlus.com/twit. Hulu Plus is your great place to watch shows like New Girl and Modern Family and the Office and The Colbert Report and all the great shows. Everything that you want to watch is all on Hulu Plus. Great networks, tons of great content. Don't miss a thing on Hulu Plus. So we thank Hulu Plus for their support of Twit, and hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus. And go to HuluPlus.com/twit and sign up today. All right, so let's dive into hardware. All right, so last episode we were wondering what the upcoming LG event was going to be. They had given a little teaser that an event was coming up, and LG confirmed that on May 1st, the event in New York City will debut the Optimus G Pro for the United States. So the speculation proved to be true in this one. Still don't understand what the little microphone was on the teaser, but I think now they're just giving out these beautiful images to go with these announcements to grab everything. But so this May 1st in New York City, the LG Optimus G Pro will be announced officially in America by LG. And then while the invitation doesn't actually specify any of the carrier partnerships, it is believed that Sprint and AT&T will both have it since they had the previous Optimus G. So we'll keep an eye out to see what goes on with that. Another LG phone. I know we were a little critical of LG phones, but I've been using the Nexus 4 for a while, and I'm converted. I think LG makes some pretty good devices, and the Optimus G had a pretty nice following. So it should be interesting to see how this one goes.
Yeah, just from the looks of it, I mean, it looks quite similar to not in styling, but in terms of this very small bezel and no buttons and things like that. It looks very similar to what HTC did with the HTC One. So this seems to be a trend.
Definitely.
And I think people are getting used to it. I know I don't really need a button. I've got a Galaxy Nexus that has never had any buttons, and I don't miss them.
Yeah, no, I'm way past the wanting the solid buttons there. I mean, mm-hmm. the fact that they come and go, I've gotten used to that.
Yep.
And I think the cleaner, the less space on the bezel, like the screen is getting wider, but the bezel is getting smaller. I think that's good for design. And we're seeing some really good phones come out of it. So
yeah, it doesn't have the style of the HTC One, though. Like, I don't look at that and think, like, oh, I really want to touch that, which is how I feel with the HTC One. And it's just a matter of the way that they had the light bezel and the speakers. But the HTC One reminds me a lot of the iPhone. And this kind of reminds me a little bit of the HTC One. So I don't know. Take with that from what you will. Sorry, Android fans. I'm just saying.
I wonder if they're going to go the Broadway route, like...
Oh, gosh.
HTC did?
Oh, let's hope not, yeah.
Or not HTC, Samsung?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was painful.
Yes, well, speaking of Galaxy S4.
Speaking of painful,
if you've been wanting to get if you haven't decided whether or not to get the Galaxy S4 and you haven't pre-ordered yet, don't go to the store. Because it looks like pre-orders right now are going to be shipping on April 30th, but the in-store date, they'll be available in-store on the 27th. So this is only for 16 gig. The 32 gig version is expected later. It turns out that the early pre-orders were going to arrive on the 25th, but the current pre-orders are arriving on the 30th. So there you go. Go to the store on the 27th if you want your Galaxy S4.
And we're starting to see, I read another article that Galaxy S4 is starting to pop up on eBay now. They're going for $700 unlocked, and so it's starting to make its way out into the world.
Right.
Really curious that it's available in stores before the pre-orders, but that's fulfillment for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, apparently that happened after the fact. Like, the early pre-orders were coming on the 25th. So to me, this means they got tons of pre-orders, right? And they're backlogged, and that's a good thing for Samsung.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And then in the ongoing saga of T-Mobile and their ever-changing data plans... longtime viewers might remember about a month and a half ago, I freaked out when I got capped. I hit my data tethering limit, and they capped me, and I lost it. And then they announced that they're announcing these new no contract, unlimited phone plans that had tethering as an option, but were extremely limited in terms of the amount of bandwidth you can get. And they had this kind of step by step. You can pay extra to get more bandwidth as it goes. Well, T-Mobile continues to streamline and simplify their plans, and they announced a new plan, or they announced a change to the Value and Classic plans that they can get tethering prepackaged and have 500 megabyte, 2.5 gigabyte, or 4.5 gigabyte options. So as opposed to making the tethering somewhat confusing and how it works. They're just going to bundle it in with the value and classic plans and then give you a couple of different steps to take in terms of how much data you want to get. I still question whether or not 4.5 gig is enough, but I know I'm an extreme user. Have you ever gotten capped, or do you use the tethering at all, Aaron?
I shouldn't say if I use tethering or not, since it's not supported on my Verizon Galaxy Nexus.
right, yeah.
But I've heard from friends that have used it, and they say it works great. No, the actually, I have a business plan on this phone, so I don't have a data cap. But I have monitored it to see if I would hit it, and I definitely would hit the 2.5 gig cap or 2.5 gig limit. And occasionally on some months, not every month, I would go over 4.5.
Yep.
So I'm with you. I granted, we are not the average or typical user here. But I don't know. I just hate caps. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them.
Oh, it drives me crazy. It drives me totally nuts. So currently right now, looking at my phone, and Chad, if you want to take the shot here, looking at my data usage, you can see that orange line is the 5 gigabyte line, and that's what I sent to give me an alarm to say that I'm almost there. And you see that I passed it a couple of days ago. So my account resets on April 29th, so I've got to make it through 6 days before and minimize the amount of data I'm using here. So clearly, if I was on 4.5 gig, I would have been capped by now. So it'll be interesting to see if they cap me at any point. I used 1.2 gig in the past week.
Yeah, I'm way low.
Wow.
It's like, and I'm not even like, it's not, I'm just using podcasts and like stuff like that. It's not, I'm not even like, I haven't tethered at all and I'm not BitTorrenting or anything like that. So, yeah.
Mine just started on April 12th, my monthly whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm way, way low. I'm not even up to a gig yet. So,
no, I did note that I could switch the Wi-Fi more often. I tend to take the lazy route and leave it on the data and data on. And I download my podcast while on BART or stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I probably should be a little more responsible with my data usage. But my whole point is that I pay a lot of money. I shouldn't have to.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So ongoing drama of T-Mobile as they try to continue to get it right. And I'll continue to be watching as a T-Mobile customer. So.
Yeah, I'm rooting for them. I mean, I've always loved T-Mobile.
They've been great. And I've never looked back. When I switched to Verizon, they've been wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. I had to switch because when I went to when I joined a certain company, they did not have a T-Mobile plan. They had everybody else. They didn't have T-Mobile. So I didn't have a choice. I had to switch. Right. And I was so upset because I really like T-Mobile. And I think that they – you know, they're doing things right. They're letting you bring your own phones in some cases and things like that. And I mean, I think that's what people want. They want flexibility. They don't want to be locked in. It's like, oh, you know, I got to buy a new phone. Like, why? Yeah. This one works fine.
Well, the whole thing, what I found out was in my problem with T-Mobile and my arguing with them about getting capped is they made the statement to me that said, we are a phone carrier, not an ISP.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that distinction. So, which I continue to disagree with. Yeah. That's just me. So, all right. So let's dive into the apps.
Last week when we talked about Facebook Home, I think, Ron, you were showing it off, and I asked you if there was a way to call a contact from Facebook Home, because you were saying it was really difficult basically to do anything except Facebook with Home installed. And you can't, right? But now you actually can, because Facebook has brought their voice over IP calling to Android users. This is in the U.S. So in the Facebook Messenger app, the latest update that just went out, I got it. If you tap the eye icon on a friend's profile, there's a new button that says free call. So you tap that and make a voice over IP call through Facebook. And that's just in the Messenger app. So you don't actually have to have Home installed. If you've got Home installed or you're in Chatheads, tap the more. I still can't say that with a straight face.
Chatheads, I can't. I feel like I'm saying something dirty. It's like, it doesn't seem right.
I know. if you're in Chatheads, tap the more info dots next to your friend's name to leap into the Messenger app, and then you can start a call that way. And kind of related to that, Facebook Messenger just did get an update today, and it got sticker support. I honestly am not. I'm not such a big Facebook user. I didn't know what stickers were. They're basically emoticons, but there's a huge wide selection and you can send them to friends. And so there's lots of cute little kitties and smiley faces and faces of many, many different expressions available. So there you go. Now, this is why you'd want a Facebook phone, right? You can call your contacts without using your minutes, voice over IP, and send them, you know, little cats.
Talk about data usage worries. I mean, it's funny because it's like using VoIP on phones is something like maybe a year or two ago I wouldn't have even considered. But then like just today I was driving up to Petaluma to do the show and Gina and I hopped on Skype and we went over the rundown.
Yeah.
Totally on VoIP over data. I was over my 3G connection. It was fine.
Yeah.
You know, could we see this as a way to get rid of the carriers? If you have a Wi-Fi enabled device, you don't need a phone number. If all your friends are on Facebook or all your friends are on Skype, you can just call them.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And when the data speeds get better, you know, more ubiquitous, right? I mean, when you're in the city, it's great. And then, you know, as soon as you go around one of the hills around here, you know, all of a sudden you drop down to 3G or nothing. But yeah, and there's some technologies coming that are going to change that. I don't know if you guys talked about that last week, but I think yeah, once the technology gets here, I don't see any reason to keep a voice network around except for, you know, emergency people, first responders, you know, they need to have that backup. But otherwise, let's go all digital.
And Google Voice can, you know, step in, and or Facebook can step in, and they can all can provide the service, further tying them into the services that they provide.
Right. It's well, that's the huge thing about this, right? I mean, is it keeps you, if you're a Facebook user, I am not. Yep. But if you're a Facebook user, I'm sure this is great for you because you can just call people and it's easy. That's the other thing, is you don't have to bring up a separate app, right?
Yep.
To make these calls. I mean, that's big for a lot of users. We sometimes forget that the more basic users need that easy access, and this provides it. So that's great. Yep.
At the same time, I use Facebook, so I don't actually have to voice call anybody.
Exactly.
I'm not a huge voice call person, so I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, that's so true.
It's a very good point. The less I use the phone, the better.
Yeah. Anyway,
exactly.
That's just me. All right. So earlier we were talking about the emergence of malicious applications in Google Apps in the Google Play Store. And unfortunately, this week we got some more bad news. Wow. Coordinated comedy. I'm so proud of ourselves right now. That's
nice.
Fantastic. Well, so the bad malicious ad network library called Bad News that was discovered a while back, some news has come out that it has been included in at least 35 different apps that are available on the Google service for download. Researchers from the antivirus provider Bitdefender said on Monday. So basically what we're seeing is that these applications that contain bad news, which is this malicious ad network library, have been downloaded from 2 million to 9 million times. Although Google... Although Google has removed 32 apps as of Friday, the company security personnel didn't remove the additional three apps until they were flagged this weekend by Bitdefender. Apps that contain the bad news code upload phone numbers, unique device identifiers, and other data from infected phones, and then present end users with prompts to download and install fake updates for legitimate applications such as Skype. So Bitdefender is continuing to comb through the Google Play Store and find apps that are using this. And Google seems to be pretty responsive in terms of taking them down. But that's 9 million downloads have had it out there. So, yeah. Gina, what was your response to this?
Well, I was reading this and I was like, well, I mean, how do you know if you download one of these apps? What apps are they? How do I check? So I started I hate to do this. And I really try to avoid doing this because I don't want to feel like I'm running Windows, you know, in the early 2000s. But there I was downloading, you know, Lookout malware scanner for my phone. I mean, you know, just to check to see, because apparently Lookout and other virus, you know, malicious malware detectors were seeing these apps before they got pulled from the Play Store. This is my concern, is that, you know, why isn't Bouncer, which is the cloud-based service that Google uses to scan for these kind of apps, like, why didn't it pull the app sooner? You know, why was it so many downloads? So I've installed Lookout. I'm going to run a scan. I'm kind of doing it. Lots of sad trombones are playing in my life because I just feel like, come on, the point at which you have to start scanning your phone for malware, like, we've all lost. Like, this sucks, you know?
Yeah, it is depressing. But I mean, we in the Linux community, we've been talking about this for years, which is, you know, it's not that it was always a Windows versus Linux and, oh, don't run Windows because there's lots of viruses, right? Yeah. But the thing was, it wasn't that it was a different platform. I mean, there are some, I don't want to go, people are going to hate on me now. There are some differences in Linux that make it more secure. Don't worry. I understand that. But as the platform becomes more popular, you get targeted. And that's what's happened here, is that
more users become more potential for malicious behavior.
Yeah, because people go where the eyeballs are. They want to be able to install these malicious apps on as many phones or as many devices as possible. So it is sad, though. I agree with you, Gina, because I was just thinking that, like, I've been getting ads for Android antivirus software and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not going to run that. This is running Linux. I'm fine. I don't need it. But unfortunately, you know, I don't know. Let's hope that Google is able to tighten up their processes and get these apps out more quickly.
That's the thing, right? I mean, the difference between now and then is, I'm happy to hear that Android's getting popular enough that adware or malware makers feel like it's a worthy target. But we have this sort of single point of, taking away side loading and other app stores, right? This is just from the Play Store.
Right.
I mean, we have the central point where Google can scan for this stuff. I mean, this is what Google does, right? I mean, they know how to find things in files. Like they have to be better at this. And I feel like, you know, this malware story, and someone in the chat room earlier was saying, oh, is this the same malware story we just keep hearing? And I agree. I mean, malware isn't the whole story about Android, but it keeps coming up over and over. And I think Google just has to be super proactive. There's just certain things about Android that I want to see Google be more proactive about, the pipeline to carriers getting updates, and also this, you know, making sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen or doesn't stick around long enough for 9 million people to download it.
Yeah.
And the thing to note too is that these are worldwide downloads. And so while, you know, I'm not to say that every app and every American English speaking right. app is safe or whatever, but we all know that there's a lot of negative things going on in places like Russia and Korea and things like that. So those 9 million downloads aren't, you know, all localized to all Android users in the U.S. This is worldwide. So anybody, you know, considering an Android phone shouldn't be scared by that. But it is interesting, that false sense of security that we have. I mean, I was a former PC user, and you always had antivirus. You always ran mm-hmm. on it. And I've been on a Mac for 5 years. A virus scan to me seems like something alien,
right?
You know, and especially on the phone, you just think your phone is kind of safe and not going to be affected by something like that. So it's important to not take that safety for granted. But also, I believe that Google and folks like Bitdefender and other folks out there will be, you know, keeping an eye on it and doing their best to make sure that we're protected.
Yeah,
but
I was just gonna say this particular article really didn't talk about the Google response. They talked about it a little bit, but I mean, I've got to think that Google has already implemented a scanning system for this now. It's like when I upload a new app to the App Store, yeah. I'm sure they're checking for this now. But
sure, but it's the things that they're not checking for.
It would just be nice to hear that too, and maybe I just didn't, you know, like I said, I didn't have a whole lot of time. Maybe I just didn't see it. Google needs to put out a response that says, you know what, we are looking for that now. And any app that gets uploaded will scan for that and will reject it automatically if we find the traces of this particular
thing. But does a response like that acknowledge it? You know, could Google not even want to give it? You know, it's the kind of thing where they're going to do it, and they're going to do it in the background, but they don't want to encourage anyone else. So they don't want to acknowledge that there could be a problem with the platform.
I don't know. I think they should acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And I think platforms like this should be, you know, part of the hackathons and stuff that go on, right? I mean, try to get a virus past our scanners, our app scanners, when you upload a thing. I mean, that would be very helpful, I think. And the community can come together and make it better.
Yep.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
All right. Yeah, we will. Keep an eye on it. So a couple other quick little app notes to make. Gina, you got the first one?
Google today released a new app called One Today, which is a charity app. It makes it super simple to donate $1 to worthy cause. So this is how I think it's going to work, because unfortunately you need an invitation to actually get the right to use this app. So if you go to...
I feel like that could have been sad tromboned.
Yeah. So if you go to the One Today page, or you download One Today, which is available in the Play Store, it will just prompt you to get your name on the wait list to be able to use the app. Without an invite, you can't use it. I haven't got an invite yet, but from what I understand, the app basically features a new charity every day with what I hope is pretty compelling content for someone who's interested in a certain cause. It makes it super easy to just donate, from what I understand, a dollar a day to a charity. I absolutely love this idea. Yeah. I hate that there's a wait list that they just didn't launch it to the public for everyone. I mean, I guess they're beta testing at this point. But I'm super excited. And this is a very googly thing to do. This is part of the reason why I cover Google, because I just think that they're sort of a philanthropy minded company. Right. And of course, this is a huge, great PR move for them. Right. I mean, they can say, hey, look at what our open mobile platform, like look how much money we've generated for charity, you know, through our platform. And that's kind of a good story to tell about Android. But just this is just the kind of thing that Google does. So I've downloaded it. I don't have an invite yet. I'm excited to donate to charity more often in smaller increments running it.
I love the irony of an invitation-based charity right. app. You know, just like, listen, you can give money, but you're going to have to wait. Like, just,
I mean, you can donate. No, you can't donate. Right, yeah, sorry. Exactly. You can donate. No, sorry. You can't donate.
So we'll see.
I assume that they're just working out the kinks between the payment system, or I don't know. Maybe they're lining up charities to feature. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well,
one today.
Google's got a great reputation to be. I mean, I know that they were right on top of the Boston thing with the People Finder and all that sort of thing. So, like, if this just continues, it makes it, you know, they got to build the infrastructure behind it, then that makes more sense. But it's a little weird.
Yeah, it is a little weird. Hopefully, it'll tie in with, like, the wallet. Google Wallet, I'm guessing it will, so that it really just makes it easy, because I've been using my phone more and more often to buy stuff. And I've got to say, like, if I could, you know, just hit something that says, you know, donate once a day or donate once a month or whatever, I think micro donations are huge. And you know, you've seen it before, like with the Haiti earthquake and things, you know, with people donating by text message. And I think this just makes it
even easier.
It makes it easier for people to do. Some people don't know how to text. I know most people do, but you know, some people are, they're concerned. Like, I don't know if this is really going to the right place or not. At least this way, it sounds like they're baking in some security stuff. So
it's gotta be tied into wallet. I can't see how it wouldn't be. And I imagine it would be just as easy as any sort of in-app purchase.
Yep, exactly.
So, all right. So a little call back to an earlier episode when we highlighted the minimum keyboard, which was a keyboard that I was very excited to see because it was one of those wacky UIs that are the kind of apps that I love. It was up on Indiegogo taking crowdsourcing for its funding to build out the app. It finished its Indiegogo campaign, and it raised a staggering 873% of its initial goal. That is a lot of money, in case you're counting at home. So what that means is that there will be a beta app available in June, as the minimum guys seem to be onto something in terms of a keyboard that allows to flatten the experience and type much more faster and more accurate. We'll see whether it works once it comes out. I can't wait to see it. But hopefully all that $87,000 is enough for them to get this done by June. So we'll see. The clock is ticking now. So congratulations to the minimum team.
Is it Minuum?
Two U's. I mean, clearly there's a huge demand for keyboards that are easy to type on and don't take up as much space. It's just that those two things, objectives, sort of compete with one another.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to try that.
Yep. And then to continue the theme of sad trombone in this episode, a longtime Twitter user favorite app, TweetDeck, will stop functioning and be removed from Google Play on May 7th. I love that. That's the best thing we've ever done. As Twitter continues to consolidate the apps that they offer, as well as deal with their own API limits, the Twitter API volume version 1.0 retirement, it seems the last the person to leave shut the lights out on your way out the door is TweetDeck. So TweetDeck is a app that came out. I use it on the desktop. I love it. I used it on the phone. I know Jason was a big fan of it on the phone, but it looks like Twitter is now going to retire it. So goodbye, TweetDeck. It was fun.
Well, TweetDeck Mobile, right?
TweetDeck Mobile, yes, correct. Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, I never got into it on the phone, but I still love it. I use it on the desktop. I actually just switched from the native desktop app to the Chrome app, and it's really awesome. I love it.
Yep. So it will continue to exist on the web. So if you use it there, you're fine. But not on the mobile side. Maybe check out Falcon Pro. Just saying.
There was an update to Falcon Pro, actually, which is not in the rundown, but I think it just came out like today.
1.8, 1.8 came out. Yep, it's very nice.
Right on. So last quick find, and I think Ron, that you're responsible for this one. There's this really cool Android cheat sheet for graphic designers, and it's actually kind of a long URL. Chad's got it up on the screen there. If you kind of scroll down, I mean, even if you're not an Android developer, but if you're just an Android enthusiast, this is a really cool cheat sheet, just kind of a reference for how Android apps, the most recent holo-themed Android apps, are designed and what kind of image sizing you need and what the action bar looks like and what a developer has to kind of think about when you have a device in different orientations and, you know, what you do when you have different screen sizes. Really cool, neat little resource. I really like this.
Yeah.
This is the show notes.
You could probably find that if you Google Android cheat sheet for graphic designers. You could probably come across it. It's up on github.io. You can track it down. But I saw this and I was like, wow, this is a really great resource for developers. And I know that we have a lot of developers in the audience that that watch the show. And so if you're really looking, I mean, I know for me, when I'm looking for new apps to show in the arena, like the app I'm going to show today, I'm looking for ones that are really using Holo in a really nice way that are, you know, really focused on design. And this seems like a great tool for any developer.
Yeah, definitely. The benefit is, I mean, if the more you can make your app look and feel native to the Android and to the phone, the more people will know where to go. You know, they're like, oh yeah, I expect this button to be here. It's here. They'll feel comfortable. They won't get confused. So it is really important. I saw it show up on Google Plus a couple days ago. So it's really good. Yep. Really good find.
Excellent. So those are the apps, and now is time to dive into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
So I love that. I love that bumper. Have you seen that new
bumper? Yeah, it's
great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Love it. Yeah, it's love wonderful. It.
So last week on episode 105, it was the three of us. It was Gina, Jason, and myself. And we had it came down. I thought for sure that Rando was going to run with it. But Rando eked by with just 46% of the votes, 284 total votes. File Expert HD, my file management app, came in second. And Looper got 10% of the vote, which which is not a strong showing. But I think it's a good app. I mean, you know, there you go. Gina's got the L.
I got smashed. Oh, rightfully so.
This episode's got to be called Cue the Horns or
yeah,
something
exactly,
like that.
Yeah,
Cue the Trombones.
But, yeah, so Looper didn't have it. So now you know the feeling to be in the third place spot there, Gina. You've had a bunch of really nice wins. And
Yes. No, I'm very, it's very clear. It was good. There was no closeness there. It was very clear.
It happens to the best of us, but you know what that means when you lose the arena? It means that you get to go first.
You get to go first.
There you go.
So I've got your app here up on my tablet, but if you want to kind of intro it, we can go from there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is a super, super simple app that does something that I very quickly that I do on my phone all the time, which is to just check the weather. I know there are tons and tons of weather apps out there for Android. I really like this one because it's based in the notification shade. So the name of the app is just called Notification Weather. There's a free version and there's a pro upgrade, which costs $1.02. But check out the free version first and then upgrade if you like it. Notification weather. So all this does is puts the weather in your location into your notification bar. It's really, really simple. It's well designed. And it's got a couple of really nice settings that let you customize how it shows up in your notification shade. I should say the shade and the status bar. So once you've got notification weather installed, the first thing you really want to do is go into settings because you can customize how the weather shows up. You need location services on in order for it to know where you are, in order to get the weather of where you are. And in the settings, you can set your temperature to Fahrenheit or Celsius. You can set your weather source, the weather provider, that is. The default is Yahoo. Do not use Yahoo Weather. That does not work. There's three options: Yahoo Weather, Open Weather Map, and Weatherbug. I switched it over to Weatherbug, and it's been working great. One of the things that Notification Weather does, not only does it put the forecast, the current weather and the four-day forecast in your shade, it also puts an icon in your status bar. So one thing that I did set in the settings is I said, hey, put the temperature in my status bar. So you literally can just look at your phone and know what the temperature is outside without having to unlock or anything like that. There are a bunch of other options in here. You can set wind speed, that kind of thing. I don't really care about wind speed in terms of like miles per hour, but I do. There's a feels like settings. You can say, tell me what temperature it feels like given the wind speed. And you can turn off or turn on the four-day forecast. So you can see the four-day forecast in the shade, or you can say, you know what, just tell me what the weather is right now. I really like the design of it. It uses, if you're on ICS or if you're on 4.0 or above, you can shrink or expand the notification bar right there in the... Yeah, I think yours is actually... Oh, is that expanded?
Yeah, wait, hang on. I gotta turn back on the...
Yeah, turn on the forecast and then the four-day forecast, and then you can trick and expand it. It's got cute little, you know, it's got nice little icon. If you upgrade to the pro version, you get a few more features. If you like it, you can get rid of the icon. You can swipe to dismiss. You can change your 4 hour, you know, your clock 12 hours or 24 hours. There's a refresh button kind of in the shade versus having to go into the settings. All in all, super, super simple app. Gives you information that you want about the weather right there up in your notification bar in your shade. It's always kind of there. You can set your refresh interval. So if you're concerned about data usage or battery usage, you can set a refresh interval to be less often if you're concerned about that. And that's basically it. Notification weather.
I got to admit, that feels like function is like, I can't live without that. That's the one yeah. That's my decider on my weather. I use a different weather app, but it has the same thing. Or great. Mm-hmm. I understand it's 70 degrees, but with the wind in San Francisco, it feels like 62, you know,
right,
like that.
Right. Yep.
That one means the world. So I'm glad to see that.
Absolutely.
This is nice. It's pretty. It's a nice little notification widget.
Yeah, it's cute. It's cute. Yeah. It's good looking. And it's just really simple.
Do they have like cards for the lock screen and things like that? I mean, I know it's supposed to be just for notification access, but I mean,
right.
I can see that also carrying over to a card or a widget.
I don't think there's a widget. In fact, I didn't look. I don't believe there's a widget. I think the whole point is just to kind of put it in your notification.
No widget.
Notification shade.
Although I imagine that if it gets enough people using it, the dash clock folks will make a widget for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They seem to just jump on whatever is a good app and then make a dash clock widget for it, which the dash clock is amazing. So.
Yeah.
Very cool, very cool. So, notification weather. It's there's a free version, and you can upgrade for $1.02 to go to the pro version. And it looks like the only difference between the pro and it looks like there's some more functionality in the pro. You can change colors, but then there's also an ad in the free version in the settings. So
right, no ad in the pro version, and a couple of other settings and tweaks. You can swipe to dismiss, and you change your clock, that kind of thing. Minor settings, but definitely I think worth the dollar. It's a nice app, so if you like it, I would say upgrade.
All right. Excellent. All right, so my turn now, as we'll let our guest finish us up. So I'll go second. In my pursuit to find beautiful apps, I discovered generally I try to keep my phone as stock as possible, and that means a lot of using the stock dialer and the stock context manager, and as well as lately I've been using the stock text messaging app. Years and years ago on Android, I used Chomp SMS, which was really cool and gave me a little pop-up when I got a text message and gave me a bunch of things. Ever since that, once I moved on from Chomp, I've just stayed with the stock one. But I think I might have found an app that's going to get me to move off the stock one because, honestly, they do it better than the stock messaging app. It's called Sliding Messaging Pro. It's only 99 cents in the Google Play Store. There is a free version if you want to try it. I went for the pro version just because I was like, hey, it's 99 cents. Let's go for it. But this is a great Holo-designed messaging app that not only leverages everything great about Holo and the new Android kind of UI, but it's got some really good functionality and really good UI kind of things. So we're going to bounce between, I want to show it off, but I don't want to show my friends' phone numbers. So we might have to show the screenshots. Although I do have it here. But basically what this is that we can – so I'll go here. And let's not get too close. But what you've got is you've got – there you go. So you've got this kind of like card-like organization of your text messages. All right.
It looks like Google Now.
Yeah, it does look a lot like Google Now. And it's got a sliding functionality so you can slide through the different conversations. So if you slide all the way to the left, you could see that, you know, here's all the conversations. It gives me a rundown up here of how many new conversations I have, how many total, how many messages I've got. I can – a trash can. I can delete them all at once. From this screen, it pulls in my avatars, and it pulls in names and phone numbers. And then I could also call somebody straight from here. And so that's really interesting. In the settings, they've got the ability to change from this light layout to a dark layout. So you can, let's see, where's the theme settings? So I can change to dark and that will change the way it looks and goes for a more black, you know, kind of darker kind of design. So, depending on what your preference is, they're also rolling out, I think it's a companion app, which is, controls all themes. So they've got a bunch of different themes that can, that you can leverage and use. So here you go. You can see up close now here on the screenshots. So, it has this card-like interface. There's a choice between the card-like interface or what they call a classic layout, which Chad, I don't think they show in the Google Play Store, so I can show quickly here. Or they might show it in the video, but so the classic layout is more of a standard kind of standard layout within text message. That's the classic layout where it just is using the slide mechanism on the UI, so you can go bounce, you can bounce back and forth. But honestly, the card layout is for me what makes this sing. It really picks up everything that we like about Google Now, everything that we like about the latest version of Android, and it's got a bunch of other great settings that really make it pretty flexible. It's got that kind of pop-up window, so when you're using your phone, if you get a text message, it will come up, and you can respond to somebody straight from that, so you don't have to go into the app. You can customize the font if you want. If you don't like Roboto, you can change to a different font. You can enable or disable the call button depending on your preference. You can apply a 24-hour timestamp. Like you can customize the notification color, the way it notifies. You can set your own vibrate pattern. It's just really customizable. There's a great control over MMS, depending on whether or not you want to have MMS enabled. You can change it so that when you're writing a message that's longer than a standard SMS message, it can either send it as an MMS or it could send it as multiple SMSs, which is a nice function I've never seen as an option.
It sends it as an MMS, what does it send it as?
That's a good question. Just look, but it sends it as a long string of text, I think, in a multimedia message. So just a string of data. So,
okay.
Yeah. So when you get it, you get the play button, on Android, and it will go through and show it to you. But as opposed to sending like three text messages, you just send the one. The key thing for any SMS or messaging text message application that you look for now is, does it have emojis? And it does. You can specify the emojis, and you can use the Android icons or not the Android icons. So really, like at every – there's a signature. I don't know who would use a signature in a text message, but still, yeah. You can turn that on. And that's not even in the advanced settings. The advanced settings go even deeper. So it's super super customizable, super easy to use, and it picks up all the good look and feel of things like Google Now. Honestly, this is something that I think Google should be looking at in terms of if they ever get around to updating the stock messaging app, because this is way nicer. So, so it's called Sliding Messaging Pro. Pick it up. It's 99 cents. It's totally worth the download if you're looking for an SMS messaging replacement. I've been using it. I just discovered it this morning. I've been using it all day, and I'm just super impressed by it.
Yeah, good pick.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. And Aaron.
All right. So, speaking of iPhone apps coming to Android, we were speaking about that, right?
We were.
Okay, good. That was a good transition.
Yeah, there you go.
My app is called The Room, which just came to Android like last week. And Google's been promoting it. This game has won tons and tons of awards. And I think it's been on iPhone, I think, for a while, and they finally came out with it on Android. And I've got to say, it's a really, really well done game. If you haven't played it,
it feels
definitely
like
it is. It's exactly Myst, what I was going to say. Yeah. If you remember Myst, it's exactly like that. It's hard to see on the video, I think, but there's actually, you can see like little floaty things floating around, like little dust particles when you're looking at it. And even the first screen on the game, you can kind of touch and control. Like if I touch this, the little lock moves around and stuff. So there's things you can do. You can already rotate things. So you kind of get a feel for it even before you actually get into the game. And then it's really all about touch. It's one finger touch. You interact with the game by, this is going to take a second to load, but you interact with the game by touching things in the environment. So there's this box in the middle of a room, and you have to figure out how to get into it. And there's notes left for you. This is the tutorial, so we'll just start that real quick. You can see there's a box here, tells you what to do. You can look around. This is just a beautiful, beautiful game. It wants you to, it says, oh, there's something on the top. So take a look at that. You double tap stuff. It zooms in very fluidly. I mean, it's just beautiful and well done. Especially I think if you have kids or whatever, they're really going to get into this because it's all hands-on. It's very tactile and it is very Myst-like. That's kind of how Myst was. It wasn't like you were, fighting the orcs or something. It was, you're interacting with the world and getting drawn into it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, that's all it is. You tap, you get things, and sometimes even the items that you get, you can manipulate. I haven't gotten too far in it yet, but I'll give you one spoiler. You get this little key very early on, and it's actually just in the tutorial, so I'm sure it doesn't matter. And you actually can interact with the key and change the way the key works and the locks that it can fit in. So, I would highly recommend this. If you like this type of game, a puzzle game that's highly interactive, I would definitely recommend going and picking up. It's only $1.99. So for me, that's for the level of detail in the work that was put into this app. It's way, way, way worth it for me. So I'm running it on my phone. I downloaded it for my wife because she's really into puzzle games and stuff too. So I would highly, highly recommend The Room.
That looks great.
And the music's that's good awesome. Too. I know I've got it plugged in. I don't know if we're able to hear it on the stream or not. But the music is top notch. The graphics are top notch. Very, very fun.
Yeah.
I've played all the way through it and I beat it. Unfortunately, I did it before the Android version was available. So I did it on
well,
the
how
iPad.
Did you play it then?
Oh, in my mind.
Oh, yeah. You know,
just
on someone else's device.
Right, right.
It was, you would never use
it. Right, no, it wasn't me. Yeah. It was someone else.
Well, I gotta admit, as more and more of these devices, I mean, as the processors get better and they can handle more of these graphics, we're seeing. Yeah. I mean, it's the game's evolution is fascinating.
Yeah, this is perfectly. Fit for the Nexus 7 too. If you've got a Nexus 7, great. I mean, it's just right. It feels a little small on my Galaxy Nexus, but the Nexus 7, especially with the quad core processor, it was just really smooth and really nice. So
cool. All right, so that is your arena for this week. We've got notification weather, sliding messaging pro, and the room. And you can go be heard. You can have speak your choice and your preference of your app in this arena. Go to aapoll.com/106. That's aapoll.com/106. And you can vote for your favorite app out of the arena, whether it could be your notification weather from Gina or my sliding messaging pro or Aaron's The Room. You can get in there and vote. We've got some votes trickling in already. And it looks like so far, it's just bouncing back and forth. First notification weather was up, then The Room is up. So that sliding messaging pro is up. Oh, this is crazy. I have a feeling, though, that The Room is going to run away with it. That's my guess. That's my prediction. So
I have a feeling I'm going to have the same week next week as I did this week.
So there you go. So hopefully Gina will up her game in next week's episode. So.
I don't know. I'll try again.
I like it. A good notification weather, a good weather app goes a long way. I've got like three of them on my phone. That's how much I like them. So.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it definitely seems like the one app that kind of essential, it's in the essential category. Like one of the first things you do is you go down and get your favorite weather app. So. Yeah.
I mean, between that and the battery widget app, Widget Reborn, I use. Those are my two. I mean, when I got the new phone, I'm like, all right, I need my weather app and I need my battery widget app.
Yep.
And I actually do have two. I use one weather as a weather app and for the notification. Mm-hmm. And then I've got another one that I use for the widget because I like the widget better.
Right, right. Yep.
I don't know. I'm crazy. Anyway, so yeah, go vote at aapoll.com/106. Another great arena. Awesome. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
We're going to see you next week.
I'll be back next week.
Excellent. So in the meantime, where can people find you?
You should go to Google+. That's where I hang out all the time. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, but I'm generally not on those websites very much. I'm on Google+ most of the time. And you can just add me to your circles, start a hangout, start chatting with me. Lots of great interaction to be had there. Also coming up in a few weeks is Bay Area Maker Fair. So I will be down there. You can find me down there talking about Open Sprinkler, which is a really cool project where you can make your own sprinkler. If you have a sprinkler system around your house for irrigation or whatever, you can actually make your own based on either Arduino or Raspberry Pi. Very cool. I've got one at home and I'll be talking about that. So other than that, yeah, just check out Google+ and I'll be announcing stuff there as it comes up.
Awesome. Very, very cool.
Yep.
Gina, where can folks find you?
Well, I work on this open source project called ThinkUp, and we actually got accepted to Google Summer of Code, which means that if
Congrats. Thank you.
So if you're enrolled in a college or university right now and you're looking for a summer job hacking on an open source project, you should check us out. If you go to blog.thinkup.com, you'll see we're on Summer Code there. Student applications opened yesterday, and I think they're open this entire week. So if you want to work with us, check that out. And I also co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific. And I'll be on tomorrow with Leo and Jeff Jarvis. And Aaron, did you say you're going to be on tomorrow as
I'll be on.
Right on. And Aaron.
Yeah, this is my Twit Marathon. So I do this show tonight, and then tomorrow morning I do Floss Weekly, and then I'm on This Week in Google. So that's kind of my, and then I'll take a couple weeks off or something. I'll be back next week for All About Android.
You can have 1 week off. There
okay,
you
thanks. Oh, boy. You're so generous. Wow.
Cool. Right on. Well, I'll see you then.
Yeah, sounds good.
And a big thank you, as always, to Chad for keeping the show operating. Chad, if only you worked on another show.
Yeah. So, by the way, my camera's a little bit zoomed out, but
You're so far away.
I know. It's like this is the domain that I control. I am working on a show right now, This Week in YouTube, brand new show. Episode 2 just came out, and then... I do my own show about Minecraft called OMG Craft, which you can check out at omgcraft.com.
which he's very humble, but it is the best show about Minecraft. So,
Thanks. So I thought it was your favorite show.
Well, it's my favorite. I mean, yes, it's my favorite, but it is also the best show on the internet about Minecraft. Someday I'll figure it out. Finally, if you like my shenanigans, you can go to about.me/RonXO, and you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all the fun stuff. And if you like comic books, you should go read Image Comics at imagecomics.com, and that's where I am during the day, making the books for you to read. So another great show. Thanks, everybody, for coming on board. We'd love to hear from you, the All About Android community. If you want to call in and leave us a voicemail, you can give us a call at 347-SHOW-AAA. That's 347-SHOW-AAA. You can email and send us video mail at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter at Android Show. As always, the show notes are available at twit.tv/AAA, plus past episodes on our sites, as well as links to iTunes and to YouTube and all the other great places where you can watch All About Android. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at about 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. So until next week, have a great week, and congratulations, Jason and family.
Congrats, Jason.
Congratulations. Change those diapers.